You're listening to Start Writing, where we explore the great minds behind the greatest stories. Hosted by Joseph Bendosky, author of the Skyfall series, and Jay Washburn, author of the Star Child space opera.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Start Writing Podcast. Today, I'm excited to introduce Kevin Sinclair. He writes Lit RPG, which I had heard about, but before I read his book, I'd never read the genre, unless you count Ready Player One. God of the Feast was a blast to read, and it's a wonderful introduction to Lit RPG. You also may learn a thing or two about the genre in this episode. Before we start, let me point out a couple things to look out for in our show today. First, at one point, Kevin says, "I don't believe in criticism." And I find it interesting that this is a theme I've heard from several authors on this podcast, and it's certainly something to think about. Second, it's cool how I came across Kevin's work. And I tell the full story in the episode, but the short version is that the same narrator performs his creation's Bane series and my Star Child series. And, by the way, I'll soon publish an interview with our narrator, the spectacularly talented and phenomenally British Simon Wright. Okay, third, Kevin has a fascinating story of success that came from the COVID lockdown. He comes from humble beginnings, and now he is quite successful just a few short years later. It's almost a fairy tale. Fourth and last, Kevin has a phenomenal accent. I believe it's called Sunderland. He's from Northern England, not far from Scotland, and you can certainly hear the similarities. Having said that, I personally listen to podcast episodes at a very fast speed. And if that's you too, you might want to slow it down just a bit on this episode. Okay, I'll ramble on no more. Here is our episode with Kevin Sinclair on What is Lit RPG.
Hello.
Kevin, how are you?
Not too bad. Can you hear us okay?
Yeah, you can hear it. You hear me?
Yep, super.
Okay, excellent. How's your day going?
Yeah, okay. Just running around as usual, trying to get some words in between you.
Yeah, excellent. Good.
God, I mean, began,
I've
hasn't it?
Gotten up mostly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So normally I start with questions. Actually, it's all basically questions. I just want to tell a quick story to you and to our listeners. So I was looking for an audiobook narrator. And I had a bunch of them. And so Simon was one of them, Simon Wright. And so as I would find a narrator who was a candidate, then I would go listen to one of their books. And this didn't happen for most of them, where I would listen to the book and I'm like, well, the narrator's good. I'm not sure I love that story though. But with yours, I was just like, you know what, man, this story really clicks for me. This is so much fun. So it was God of the Feast that I listened to kind of as an audition for Simon. And so the other thing is, I had never read, I didn't really understand the Lit RPG's genre. And so that was another perk. I was like, I want to listen to this because I want to understand Lit RPG. So anyway, I'm blown away by your book. I loved it. And I thought Simon did a great job too. So the first question I love to ask is, tell me the story of your name. And for some people that means what their name means. Maybe it's who you're named after, or maybe it's a story of kind of how you've built your name since you've been living. But yeah, tell us the story of your name, Kevin Sinclair.
There's not really a lot for Kevin, just the name that my parents decided to give us. There's no, as far as I know, there's no history. I think in the 80s, his parents did, they wanted it to begin with a kicking K, because my sister was called K. So that's basically the first name. The second name is, it's a Scottish name from the Highlands of Scotland. And It's from Sinclair. I have done a Clan Sinclair. I have done a little bit of history and traced my roots back to, I think, the Shetland Islands. I got back to in the 1740s, but that's as far as I got.
Tell me, where did you grow up and what was it like growing up there?
So I am from Sunderland, which is in the northeast of England. It's not far under the Scottish borders. It's a nice enough town. It's very sort of working class, blue collar. We had a lot of heavy industry here, shipyard buildings, and a lot of mines, which are closed down sort of the 80s. So there was a lot of depression in the area growing up. But certainly interesting, lots of colourful characters to inspire and help to create some cool characters in my own books.
So I'm actually curious about this after having read God of the Feast. I love the buddies there, you know, Clive, and he has his pals. Mm-hmm. Is that inspired by your own buddies and your own gang of friends?
not so much. It's just a sort of a amalgamation of everybody I've sort of met along the way, you know, like you'll just pull out, like tease out certain character traits of some people, like some, you know, extra grumpy people or aggressive people or whatever, thinking of funny moments. I've spent sort of, must have been about 18 years on building sites here, okay, sort of working in construction. So a lot of that comes from that sort of the banter and the way some people communicate in certain scenarios. So yeah, a lot of that.
That's cool. So I'm curious how you, when you were a boy, how you first made money, and then when was the first time you made money writing?
I tried to go through the traditional education route, and I managed the first year in university, where I did philosophy. And then I just sort of, with all the money that it takes to be a student and everything else, I ended up just coming away from that. And I always aspired to be a writer then, and I'd sent a few, like I'd sent a fantasy novel I'd wrote around the time away for submissions and got nothing back. And then I started a family, just needed money. And I just ended up, me father's a plasterer. Are you familiar with plastering in America? It's more dry lining, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I was wondering, is it drywall? Is it like, anyway, yeah, go ahead and tell me.
Yeah, it's sort of wet plaster, so it would be like back to bricks or on old lat plaster. So like a full, like traditional sort of plastering that we use here on the brick houses. So really, yeah, I just did that for, well, probably from about 20 to 37. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I'd written anything from being about 25. I just stopped writing everything. I was just exhausted all the time, just looking after the family, working.
Well, so can I ask, but I've always, as a plasterer, you're doing manual labor. Does that give you a lot of time for headspace? So you're thinking a lot and, I mean, doing your philosophy?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's a very repetitive job. Mm-hmm. Hard but repetitive, just the same thing again and again. I found audiobooks. I've always read, but I only ever read paperbacks. And I stumbled onto Kindle and ebooks in about 2015, and then audiobooks about a year later. And sort of having audiobooks around that time, sort of playing all the time, like the days just flew by. And it just that started getting it back into us again, like, you know, that I could do this, listening to some of the stories. I'm like, you know, it might take a while, but I could write that. I could definitely write that. So, yeah. And then COVID happened. Yeah, March 2020. And I think about the second day of, because all the sites had closed down in England, about the second day, I'm going to do it. This there'll never be a better opportunity now to do it. So that would be the first time I made any money with writing. That in the March, I started writing. I think I finished the first draft in about 10 days. I was just like, I was just ready
That's
to do
crazy
it.
Crazy fast.
to be fair, the second draft took about 2 months, and then we edited it, and I made my own cover. Are you familiar with GIMP, G-I-M-P there?
Yeah.
I downloaded that because it was free. I made my own cover, and then I didn't pay for a professional editing. I just did it myself, and my wife helped us. And then my wife was like, it's not ready. And I'm like, I'm doing it. And then in July, I just published it. But I didn't know anyone at the time. And I'd literally just like, looked around like how to self-publish. And I left it up for a month. And it, for me, it done amazingly well. And I made $400 in a month. But a lot of the feedback through the reviews was, it's not brilliantly edited. And I met some friends as well, some other authors, and they said, Kev, the cover's awful, mate. You need to get rid of that cover. They still take the mickey out of us now. They still like have a laugh at this cover now. So I pulled it down. It was Condition Evolution. I pulled it down. I took it off. And if you change 10%, like over 10%, you can republish as a second edition.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. I think it was at about 60,000, and I literally got it to about 66,000 on a rework. But I'd made it better. I took in a lot of, like, I think I had about 18 reviews and feedback from other sources. And I made it better. I had it professionally published and edited, and I got a professional cover. And then went again.
Dang, I really want to see your old cover now.
Oh, God, it's awful.
Well, man, so...
I don't know how to find it on my laptop.
You've come a long way, and I mean, it's not even that long, but you just have stellar covers, a stellar lineup. That's cool here in the beginning, because I can see where you are now, and that's just a fun story. But
yeah, oh, I mean, it's been crazy, sort of. It was that little spark, like, oh, people are going to read this. They're actually going to read it. And some people hate what I write, but some people genuinely love it. And I just have such great feedback from people from all over the world. And so this is it.
Yeah,
I'm going to do it. And I don't think I've stopped writing since. Like every day, like morning to night. Like when I had to go back to work, I've been able to stop working now, but I think that was it. Halfway through 2022, I stopped working. And I literally just getting up at 5 o'clock, writing till about 8 o'clock, going to work. Or now I take the kids to school. And then I'll be writing till about 9 or 10 o'clock at night, every night.
Dang. Yeah, that's impressive. So let me shift gears for a second, and then I do want to get back to your writing. I want to ask you about RPG. So again, I didn't know anything. Like, I didn't understand the genre until I read your book. Your book's really the only one that I've read from lit RPG. But I just want you to pretend like I don't know what that even means, lit RPG, and just tell me, like, what it, explain this genre to me.
So initially, it was the idea that you would be inside of a game of some description. That seemed to be the way most people went with it originally. But it's kind of progressed and developed from then, where it may just be an alien planet, like where statistics, physical statistics or abilities are noted down. So it's not, as you probably know from my book, it isn't actually in a game. Mm-hmm. There's no game really about it. But I suppose what's really cool about it and what a lot of people really like about it is the sort of the marked progression. So in any fantasy, you know that a character is getting stronger as they're learning and they're becoming whatever it is that they're growing to. So it's kind of a progression fantasy with statistics and numbers and notifications to just sort of like give you that something always that you're reaching for.
Yeah.
And I think that could be what makes it addictive for a lot of people as well.
Yeah, I was just noticing as I listened that it was the progress is very notable. And so you see him level up and it's just like, well, this is exciting. This is the new level. And so, yeah, it's interesting how that plays into the reader experience. But,
yeah. I mean, I hadn't read any until 2017 it was. It sort of, I just came from mainly historical fiction, fantasy and sci-fi, just all the classics. And I read tons of Joe Abercrombie, Bernard Cornwell. That's sort of where I came from. And then I just found it and I just said so addictive to read and so generally quite fast flowing and entertaining.
Cool. Did you play D&D as a kid or any particular RPGs?
I had played a couple of times later on, sort of when I'd went to university. I had a few games and I have played Warhammer with my eldest son, and a couple of my other sons are just starting to get into it now. But mainly through computers, so playing games like Skyrim and Fallout. I think Fallout's probably my favorite game, but yeah, just that sort of thing.
Cool. Did you see the new D&D movie?
I did, yes. Oh. We went to see it.
So I haven't seen it, but I'd love to hear your review of it. Just a quick review, you know.
I think it was just genuinely good fun. It was just well made, very good fun. There wasn't anything to lose your interest, and it just kept coming. Some good laughs, some funny moments. It felt like a D&D campaign in the sense of the silly things that happen and like everybody's roles to play and backing them roles up as they go through.
I think everybody
was worried about the film. They really were, like, they were thinking, oh god, this is going to be another absolute travesty. But on the whole, I think like most of the people I speak to, they're really happy with it.
I'm excited to see it. So
yeah, it's worth a watch.
And did you say you went with your son or
I did, yeah.
Okay, cool. And so when you're saying you're playing Warhammer with him, you're talking about tabletop, not video game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Huh. Yeah. So I know about Warhammer. I know a lot about these things, but I'm not super, like, I've played a D&D campaign like one time. And anyway, so I'm still learning about it. But so now I'd like to ask you some questions about Podium. So you initially were an indie author, like when you published Condition Evolution, that was all on your own. And from what I understand, Podium is doing your audiobooks. Are they also kind of publishing your ebooks now too? Or no. Tell me about your relationship.
No, that's all self-published, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, ebooks are entirely self-published. I think Podium are always sort of on the lookout. I had a few issues with doing the audio myself on Condition Evolution, to the point that I've only got audio presently to book 5, but I'm on to book 7 in the series. And it was just difficult, like a whole difficult process. And it was taken as away from what I needed to be doing. I mean, I'm trying to write books and keep producing books, but I need to sort of build the business aspect up of it as well. Everything that goes into that. in the audio, it's expensive to produce yourself. You really need like decent audio editing, and basically just people who know what they're doing with audio. And I didn't, and I was relying on the guy who did my first series, and he was very good. He got the editing done and everything, but it just kind of ground to a halt in the end. And I didn't produce audio for my second series. For this one, I thought, I'm just going to give it to the experts. It wasn't even about having it published per se. It was about, I just want to give it to somebody who knows what they're doing.
And so was it Podium who found Simon for you?
No, I found Simon. I listened to his work on the Renoirs series, and I thought he sounded brilliant. And it's just a really good choice. I'm over the moon with what he's done.
Do you have a favorite character that he brought to life, I guess?
He did brilliantly with Clive. He really did.
Yeah, the Sunderland is so fun.
Oh yeah, he's really went with it. you know, I think he did the notifications very well. And there was a bit where they sang, and I thought he just really, really like absolutely nailed that. It like really elevated the book, in my opinion.
Yeah.
His little, they're singing in the Dwarven tunnels.
Yeah, that's super cool. He's so talented.
He is.
So I'm going to ask what are the pros and cons of working with Podium, but you can just do pros. I don't want to undermine your relationship at all, but so tell us the pros, and if you want some cons. And the reason I ask this question is our listeners are authors, and there are people who might want to do follow your route. And so just any advice or thoughts about your experience would be awesome.
Yes, I genuinely don't have any cons with Podium so far. It's just sort of been a perfect experience. That is coming from having tried to do it myself and really appreciating what they're doing, having to try and find the money, and you know, if the series doesn't perform straight away, you, as an indie author, you, and just starting out, you really need to see a return quite quickly, don't you? I'd sort of say 3 months, and I would be expecting to have a return on whatever I'd spent. I would need to have a return on whatever was spent full time. So literally being with Podium just takes all that away, because they're paying for the narrator and they're paying for the editing and everything, and the making sure it's a clean product to go on. So, and it's just that you don't have to. I mean, I'm glad I have learned what I learned doing it myself, because then I know sort of what's going on when using Podium. But yeah, really, it was, right now it's the best decision I've made, because it just frees up my time to do everything else that I need to do.
Yeah. I don't know if you can talk about your contract, but how do you split earnings with them?
I can't actually remember. it's around. I can't actually remember what I'm allowed to see as well.
Okay. Yeah. What I'm not allowed to I don't want to get you in trouble, so that's fine.
It's okay. I'm happy with it. It's I mean, you'll know that through Amazon anyway, you only receive 40% if you go direct, and if you go wide, it's 25%, which just seems like a pittance. But then going through the process with them, I never know what's happening anyway, because there seems to be a sale on every, like literally every month there's a different type of sale on. And most of the time it just baffles us what you're earning and what you're not. The books are going on for, I think God of the Feast is $63 for the audio book. But then obviously you have the credits, which are $9.99 or whatever. I'm not sure about the on your side. So it's all very confused. It's like 40% of what?
Yeah. Man, so I've had that same frustration. On the Kindle side, they'll tell you, like, this is your book's price and this is how much it sold for. And they'll even take a few cents out for this is how much it cost to download it. And it's very clear. And then you go to the Audible side and it's like, I have no idea what money is coming through.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, that is part of it. And doing it independently as well, sort of doing it through ACX, when you come to sort of the tax of doing it as well, and you've got to work out, or if you pass it to an accountant, which I have now, you've got to work out every country and everything related to it. Yeah. And then the bank charges, and sort of, it just gets so mind boggling. but you'll know yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, and that, I suppose a lot of that is why I went with Podium. I mean, I'll be honest, from my perspective, when I got into it, I wasn't thinking about it. Audiobooks, it's almost just an additional bonus. Mm. So it was always all about the e-books for me.
Mm. Yeah, cool. Well, so can I ask you, I'm actually a little surprised to hear you say that. Do you know what the split is? Like, what percentage do you sell of ebooks versus audiobooks?
I'm really not sure. It's I make a lot more from ebooks.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting. So I just know that Brandon Sanderson recently said that he sells like 75% audiobooks, which is a shockingly large percentage. But
that is huge. Yeah, that is I'd seen a lot around Brandon Sanderson and Audible lately as well.
Yeah, yeah, man, yeah, that guy's skyrocketing.
Well, I think I've read nearly every Brandon Sanderson book, and I've only listened to one of them. Oh. So those figures are not quite right for
me. Yeah, interesting.
I think I bought Oathbringer on audio. That's the first one.
Uh-huh. Yeah, dang, cool. Okay, so I want to hear about your cover art. So you started in GIMP, and now you have these fantastic covers for Creations Bane. Tell me that process. How'd you get such great artwork?
I think it's just sort of being in the community and asking around who has done what. My covers for Condition Evolution, I went through 99 Designs. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with that site? And I'd heard a lot of horror stories about it, but I found a great artist. I think he was Indonesian. Eco Pute he was called. And he did all the Condition Evolution covers, and he did my Sesmiel Accord covers. But then I think he had a lot of work on, and they were starting to come slower and taking longer to get, and a little dip in quality as well. So I thought it was time to move on. But I think his covers, just for the front, were about $199. And I think it was closer to $300 for the back as well. Huh. The sort of full wrap. And then I went with an Argentinian artist, Luciano Filiatis. And he's quite a bit more expensive. Hmm. But he was brilliant and sort of so colourful and like coming alive, and it really felt like his characters jumped out of the page.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great way to describe it.
Yeah, they really do. But he's also had a lot of work on, and I've moved again for the fourth one, and I'm using a British artist this time, an English artist who sort of lives, I think about 2 hours away from where I live now. And I found him on ArtStation. Huh. And that's a great place to look for artists. It really is. But he's done the fourth book cover on Creations Bane. I don't know if you can see it, but it's
and it's coming out.
It's different, but it's I think it fits in well with the.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. I think all of your covers are sweet.
Well, they say don't read a book by its cover, but that's almost what the covers are for at the same time, isn't it? It's read me.
So when you do these designs with them, do you make suggestions and say, well, you know, so the first one, I mean, has Clive and his sword and then like a demon. Do you describe that or do you tell them to read the book and they just take it? Or like, how does that come about?
No, I'd be surprised if any of the artists have read any of the books, but I do describe it. I give them as much detail as I can. It's always awkward, isn't it? Because I'm not an artist. So it's sort of like, I want Clive fighting some demons or a big demon like guy. And then it would be just sort of description of how he looks in my mind. But what I tend to have had is the sort of give us a couple of very rough mock-ups. I might even provide a rough mock-up for them, but I mean, generally they are absolutely awful. But they give us a couple of rough mock-ups and then I'd say like, oh, I like the direction you've gone with that. We'll go with that. And then they'll sort of add a bit colour and more detail and say, are you happy with that? Do a couple of little tweaks and then that's normally it. It's normally maybe three times we have back and forth. But I think when you find a good artist, you can trust them, can't you? It's sort of like, you know so much better than me what you're doing here.
Well, and I thought I read, did you have someone separate do the typography? So tell us about that.
Yes. Stephen Landry is a fellow author. He does a lot of sort of sci-fi lit RPG. But this was all new to me. The first covers, the artist did them both. But apparently that's not common for the sort of when you're employing, I don't know, an artist. It just sort of came as news to me. I was, oh, so who's your typographer? I don't know. It's just the guy who did the cover. So that was news to us, and it increases the cost, doesn't it? It's like, oh, right, so there's something else to add on. Fantastic. But they do a great job and you can see a difference. You can see somebody, it almost is like a different form of art. So I do appreciate what they do.
Yeah.
A lot better than I could ever do. So happy to hand it over.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, it's excellent work. Okay, I want to ask you about your writing process now. And I'm going to start with a question that I hate getting asked, and I'm going to see how you answer it. how do you come up with your ideas?
I will start with a premise and a character. So for Clive, I knew I wanted to write a portal fantasy. I knew I wanted it to be epic. I wanted gods in there. I wanted demons and as many fantasy creatures as I could fit in, you know, like, but sort of my take on them, like how I would want them to develop. And really it's then just sort of taking a character, what I really wanted. In my mind, I had a little bit Gordon Ramsay for Clive. Like he was sort of running in my mind a little bit. So I just had that sort of mindset. So we're going to take not Gordon Ramsay, but like that kind of like quite brash and confident and determined, but not necessarily perfect or right ever. And we're basically going to put him in a fantasy world. And then I'd wrote the scenes where it was the beginning scenes, and his friends just kind of appeared in my mind. It was sort of like you would try and get a message to someone, wouldn't you? Mm-hmm. If that was happening, you would try and get a message. Who would you get a message to? How could you? So it just kind of followed that idea, because I always end up bringing lots of characters into my books. I can't help it. People to bounce off. And it was that, and I don't plot. I'm not a plotter at all. I just do a vomit draft. I just type, and I'll just write little notes down if I think like, oh, I need to go back and change that, but I'll never go back and change anything. And what tends to happen is I'll hit a wall somewhere. It might be at like sort of 40,000 words, 60,000 words. It's never more than 60,000 words. And once I hit that wall, I sort of go, right, I need to find a way around this thing that I've gotten myself into. And that's when I'll do my second draft of that sort of first section.
Oh, huh.
So I just stop, I'll second draft that. And as I'm going, I'll know that I've got this problem coming, and I'll sort of find solutions and ways around it as we're going along. And that's working really well for us every time. So I get back to the point I was at. I've normally got a lot more words added on by then. And then I just go again, off, just type and type as much as I can.
A couple follow-up questions. So do you have a word count goal per day, or any particular way that you keep pushing so hard?
If I'm not in the editing process, I aim for 10,000 a day. And I have had periods where I would reach that 10,000 a day. But I've been writing so much so regularly. I think it was around this Christmas, because a God of the Creation's Being has, I think it's like 1 million words in it so far, on like the first 4 books. And I just kind of hit a wall. Then it wasn't writer's block. It wasn't that I didn't have ideas, and it wasn't that I could still write. But suddenly, from probably averaging about 8,000 words a day, I just dropped to about 4 to 5, and I couldn't pick it up. I couldn't make it like them come anymore, any faster. Which, I mean, 4 to 5 is reasonable, and I'm really happy with that. It keeps us going, it keeps us producing. But I think it was a little bit of burnout that you hear so much about. But I aim for 10 and normally hit about 8.
Okay, cool. I'm very much an outliner. Well, and it's not like really detailed outlines, but I definitely have a structure for where I want my story to go. So it's cool hearing this other perspective, because it's kind of, I mean, you've heard on our podcast, we've talked about gardeners versus architects, but people will say plotters or pantsers. I just think it's really impressive what you're doing, like how quickly you're rolling this stuff out. And
I always sort of think that in a way that first draft is a plot. Like, if that makes any sense, it's sort of, that is the plot, and it's still highly fixable and sort of changeable. But if you were going with like the truest sense of what everybody normally sees and means, I had no idea that that was going to happen at the end of God of the Feast. What happened? That just developed as we went along. There was no way. I don't think there was any way I could have plotted that. And God knows where my mind would have had to be to have gotten from where I started to how I ended the book. But I like that aspect of it. I like the going through the adventure myself almost, and sort of, you know, how would this happen here? I don't do a lot. I don't worry a lot about any sort of form or structure as I write. A lot of my first draft as well is, it'll go from, I'll start from the beginning and work through, but I will, a battle may come where I'm particularly excited, or a conversation, and it'll be really detailed. There'll be so much to it, and then they'll be traveling to somewhere else, which is for me like relatively dull to sort of write, and then they were there. and I just miss out all of that. And in my second draft, I have to sort of flesh all those portions out and add that, layer that detail on.
So if you don't have an outline, well, you don't have an outline. So how do you know when you reach the end of a book? Like, does it suddenly strike you like, oh my gosh, this is the ending, and you just kind of realize, or what's that like when you get to the end?
I can, on a first draft, I can sort of never finish it and never finish the end, and I'll never have that ending down. So maybe I'll sort of draft that right up to the end, and I'll have an idea about what I want to happen in that ending, but I'll not quite write the ending. It'll literally be like the last like two chapters or something. I'll not write it. I'll just put a couple of notes of how I think it's going to end. And then sort of I'll drop back again with the second draft, and I'll come through and I'll build to that end, and I'll bring in everything that I sort of need to make sure it's as dramatic as possible.
For me, it's vague. I can't really say how many drafts I do, but do you have a specific number of drafts or times that you go through a manuscript?
I would like to see 3, but I tend to do a lot when I'm going through editor's work. I do 3 before the editor gets it. And so it's literally the first draft, my second draft, and then I like to go through literally just fine-tuning it. And more specifically, I like to focus on how people are talking, because I do a lot of dialogue. There's a dark elf queen in God of the Feast, and I'll look through and it's like, well, she's talking like Clive. we can't have that. She's supposed to be a regal dark elf queen. So like, we'll change that around. And just basically that for all of them, sort of, I spend that little bit of extra time trying to get into the head of each character to make sure the dialogue works for them. So that's pretty much it, the third draft, and then off to the editors.
Do you, I know that when you're creating a fantasy world, it can be very complex and it's easy to forget things. Do you keep some kind of a story Bible that kind of keeps that all straight for you?
Yes, it's very, very basic. It's normally just a page of notes. I have all my stats on a spreadsheet because they're particularly quite difficult to keep track of. But generally speaking, I've got the maps and a few pages of notes. It's not a lot, and I make them sort of as I'm going through it.
Okay. Man, so I listened to your audiobook. Do your books have maps in them, or is that just for you?
No, the books have maps in. I haven't quite worked out how to get them into the audiobooks yet. I think there is a way. I know there's definitely a way, but I've not broached that yet. It's something I need to do.
Okay, cool. Man, yeah, I love a good fantasy map. That's cool.
Yeah, definitely.
So you mentioned your wife, I think. My question is, who beta reads your work? Who's the first person or first people that give you feedback?
I have started using Royal Road.
Oh.
So God of the Feast was published entirely on Royal Road at that third draft stage. So how that tends to work for me is that I would, let's say, when I've said that I might get to 60,000 words and then I'll drop back, I'll do that, and then I can post it chapter by chapter, day by day. I do sort of 5 chapters a day. And Patreon as well. I use my Patreon now for that, and they get 5 chapters a week. And that does come in quite handy. So that's sort of where I would say like the fine tuning on that third draft really comes in. So on those drafts, they'll not get that. You know, they might have Queen Denevra talking like Clive a couple of times. But yeah, that would probably be it. To be fair, the feedback isn't amazing though. it's normally just people chatting about the chapters and what happens. Generally, that would be about it, though. I've never really used a lot of beta readers, only ARC readers. I suppose I'm just writing the story that I really want to read, and if people are like it. I mean, the editors will see if anything's been repeated or needs chopping out. But that's about it, really. Yeah. I don't believe in criticism too much. And that sounds crazy, but I'm just very... I think you can criticize. I think it's very easy to criticize anything. I mean, I could sit here and criticize Lord of the Rings if I wanted and like tear it apart, but I love the book. I like it. Like, it deserves to be where it is. It's the easiest thing in the world to criticize, unless it was somebody very experienced. What I tend to find is if there's something that's reoccurring, a critique that you're seeing again and again, like, oh, this character's really whiny, your main character's really whiny, and 10 people out of 15 people have said it, you'd be like, maybe I need to reduce his whininess a little bit. But if it's sort of 1 out of 15 or 2 out of 15, I just think, well, that's personal preference.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's always going to be that way. Not everyone's going to like what you write.
Dang, that's cool. Honestly, I kind of feel like that's a personal lesson that I am learning, that criticism, I think, can be damaging, or it can, like you're saying, you could stop enjoying Lord of the Rings because you're becoming a critic. And that would just be sad. You know, that would be a shame. So
absolutely.
Yeah, that's cool. I love that. Okay, I'm going to ask you like 6 or 8 rapid fire questions. I assume your answers will be short, but you can make them long if you want. But
yeah, we'll get deep.
If you had to pick one book, one of your books to be a movie, which one would you pick?
It would have to be God of the Feast. Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Definitely.
paper, ebook, audiobook, or podcasts?
Which is my favorite?
Yeah, I mean, it's purposefully vague, but yeah, pick one of those.
I never thought I'd say this, but now it's probably ebook.
Cool. Was that like a tricky transition for you, or?
Awful transition. I refused for so long. I refused. the only reason I did it was because I was reading Peter Brett, The Demon Cycles.
Okay. I'm not familiar, but yeah.
And I got to the end of the third book. I'd bought 3 paperbacks like quite cheaply, and I got to the end of the third book. It was early on a night. I knew I wouldn't be able to pick it up. I went on Amazon to buy, like, to have it delivered. And I've always seen the Kindle thing there. I was like, no. And I thought, you know what? Let's give it a go. And I've never looked back.
Oh,
it's
really?
Just amazing. You've got it everywhere. If I'm waiting for somebody, like to pick somebody up, there's just a book there. You've got a whole library everywhere you go. The only thing I don't like about it is a paperback landing on your face when you fall asleep at night is a lot softer than a phone. And I've done that a few times.
Oh, that's hilarious. So do you read on your phone and not on a Kindle or something like that?
No, just on my phone.
Yeah, me too, actually. But yeah,
cool. I actually, when I started in lockdown on writing again, we only had one laptop and it was pretty much broken. We'd had it for 10 years. So I wrote the entire first draft of Condition Evolution on my phone.
Whoa. So were you dictating mostly or using thumbs?
No. Type Google Docs. Wrote it in the first draft entirely on my phone.
That's crazy.
And then we bought a new computer just to edit it, because it's impossible to edit on your phone.
Yeah, really challenging. Dang, that's awesome. What's something you're looking forward to?
Finishing a series, because I haven't done it yet. As crazy as that sounds, I have conditioned evolution to a point where it can stop, but it has the potential for like a sort of next section. I'm looking forward to finishing the series. I will be finishing God of the Feast in 6 books. If I get it, I always planned for 6 books, but where I'm at with the fourth book, I'm sort of like, I'm going to have to see how book 5 goes, because I might finish it with book 5.
Oh, really? I thought you were going to say the opposite, where you might add a book. But wow, that's interesting.
I'm always pushing when I write. I don't really go down the garden path, so to speak. It's always a push. So Clive's sort of really advanced in book 4. So I just don't know. There's a lot of threads to tie together. There's a lot of things going on across the entire galaxy. So we will see.
Okay.
But yes, I think this year it's potentially finished.
Dang, that's exciting. That's pretty cool. What does work-life balance look like in your life?
Awful. Just truly awful. It is, I try to get up at 5 most days. I have periods where I'm not doing that, but my general idea is get up at 5, which I do. I probably do about 50% of the time. And then I'll write until 8 o'clock when I take the kids to school. I try to walk to the school, so it's like an hour and a half of walking, and then sort of get back. I will write entirely through until I pick them up again. Come home, cook tea, see everyone, and then about 6 o'clock I'm back on the computer until 9 o'clock.
Dang. That's amazing.
I write till then.
That's pretty impressive. Wait, so you're walking to school. So like a 45-minute walk one way and then back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dang, that's cool.
Well, it's the only exercise I get.
Well, yeah, man, walking's pretty good for you. So that's cool.
It certainly is, yeah.
What book? Oh, well, sorry. I already know this. I wrote all these questions and now I'm just like reading my... The question is, what book are you working on now? Which I think Creation's Bane 5, right?
No, it's actually not.
Oh.
I agreed happily to do a joint universe with a few other authors. So there's 4 of us each writing 2 books in a shared universe. It's a cyberpunk universe. So my book surrounded an orc gangster, basically somebody who's fallen out of the army and they're building their way up within this cyberpunk city. So that's what I'm writing now. And we're all posting that on Royal Road and our patrons as we go. So that's to be produced in August.
Dang, that's cool. Well, I'm glad I still asked the question.
Yeah, you never know.
Yeah. Is there a name for that series? Have you guys gotten the title for the series?
The universe is Autumn, the City of Autumn.
Okay.
But it's just sort of called Autumn, A-R-T-E-M.
Okay.
Sorry about that. Okay. Had a senior moment.
Yeah, we all do. Okay, what book are you going to read tonight?
I'm currently listening to Beware of Chicken, which is it's a cultivation book narrated by Travis Baldry. So I'll be listening to that. And I have a few books that I'm reading on Royal Road as well. I'm reading Mistrunner, which is a cyberpunk. And I'm also reading the other authors' books who were writing the universe alongside me, so much reading.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot.
I cut off at 9 o'clock working, and then I'll read for an hour before I go to bed.
Dang, yeah, that's cool. What author do you look up to?
My favourite all-time author was David Gemmell, but he's dead now, so I don't necessarily look up to him because he's not with us anymore. But brilliant author. After that, I would say Joe Abercrombie and Bernard Cornwell.
Cool. So I don't know David Gemmell or the third guy you said. What is a famous book from each of those two?
David Gemmell, sort of my favorite from what he wrote was his debut novel was called Legend, and it's about an axeman called Druss. But there's a whole series following that particular axeman. But absolutely amazing, heroic fantasy writer. So the best I've ever read of that. It's really, really good books, really empowering. It's just like so much fun. Bernard Cornwell has his historic fiction. And he's wrote, have you heard of The Last Kingdom, the series on Netflix? He wrote the books of that. Sharp, have you ever heard of Sharp, the TV series with Sean Bean?
I have.
Yeah, he wrote those as well.
Dang, cool.
So he's been around a long time.
Yeah, sweet. Okay, I'll have to check him out. My last question is, what is the one book that has had the greatest impact on your life?
Wow, quite the question. I was going to see a David Gemmell book, and then I was like, but what about Lord of the Rings? And then I saw I loved Asimov when I was younger as
Oh,
well.
cool.
But I'm going to go beyond all of that now, sort of where I live, reading isn't that prevalent. Like, not, it's not really a common pastime for a lot of people. It's kind of seen as a chore almost. It's kind of seen, do you know what I mean? And I didn't want to read for ages as a kid. And I remember I was 10 years old, and my dad had bought us books for Christmas because my dad likes reading and he's always trying to get us to read. And I'm like, open them up, books. What do I want books for? And I think I was just really bored one time. It was like about a month later, and the books were there, and I started reading a point sci-fi. There were. Can you remember the point sci-fi
I
books?
don't know, no.
Yeah, it was just sort of like loads of different authors. And it was a First Contact, it was called. And that was the first book I read because I wanted to read it.
Oh, that's
And I just
cool.
never stopped after that. I read that book. I went and found the next ones. It was about five in the series. It just
Dang,
never stopped.
that is so great. That's a good answer. Okay, so if someone wants to contact you, I know you're on Twitter and that's in the show notes, and I'll put your website in there. Do you have a preferred way that people reach out if they want to get in touch?
I'm on Facebook. I'm easy enough to find under my name, my email. They're the main ones, I think, really. Email or Facebook.
And then, so I'd like to give you the final words, and that can be an invitation to buy your book, or it could be, a request, or it could be a piece of advice, or it could maybe there's a question that I should have asked you, but I didn't. Anyway, I'll let you wrap it up. What do you want to say?
Suppose just if there's anybody there who's had like the dream of writing, even if they're not sure, even if they've maybe not had the like what is perceived to be the necessary education to write, we're all storytellers, and like the main thing is if you're having fun when you're writing, people are going to feel that when they read it. They're going to have fun with you with it, and you can add so much on with the sort of second drafts and third drafts. That's where like the real polish sort of comes. That's where where you look intelligent as a writer comes from, isn't it? Where you've got the experience of hindsight, and then you can get decent editors for a reasonable price to really sort of help you along in the process. And if it's something you want to do, I would absolutely recommend that you just do it. You just sit down, have fun, and write that book on your phone, whatever you want. Google Docs, it's free. You can just, if you can type a text message, you can write a book.
Awesome. Well, Kevin, thank you so much. This has been a real pleasure. I've enjoyed chatting with you.
Well, thank you for having me.
And to our listeners, it's time to start writing.
Tyranny rules the galaxy. Tiberos has crushed every hint of rebellion. Like the grip of his cybernetic hand, he maintains a relentless hold on the populace. The power he hates most is the psionic magic of the song. A force so strong it flows out as light from the eyes. People with such powers are called radiances, and Tiberos's witch hunters kidnap any that surface. As the radiances slowly vanish, so does the galaxy's hope. Till Kaolet Whitesun, one of the last radiances, gives a risky speech denouncing Tiberos and the extermination of her kind. The message spreads across the galaxy like the light of a supernova. She becomes revered as the uncrowned queen, the one with the power to finally unite the people. And then, doom falls, in the form of the crushing hand of Tiberos. He captures Kaolet, sentencing her to the darkest dungeons and imminent death. All hope is lost. Until a lone pilot appears. A pilot who wants nothing to do with Kaolet or her rebellion, yet who may in fact be the galaxy's last hope. A pilot whose ship, the Sanctum, was created by an ancient alien race. A pilot who stole that ship from Tiberos himself. A renegade pilot named Starchild.
Get the Starchild paperback, ebook, or audiobook at starchild.jwashburn.com.